Learning needs to be joyful.
I'm Catherine Mengu Ward for Reason TV. I'm speaking with Chris Anderson, who is the curator of TED Talks. Thanks for taking a minute to talk with us, Chris.
Thank you.
So tell me about why we should be excited about the TEDification of education.
What I spoke about today and what I passionately believe is that education starts with the one key question. Is there a spark there? Is there curiosity there? You know, we're in this world where there's all of the world's knowledge is available to someone who's curious. Just summon it to your screen, your phone, your computer, whatever. But curiosity is hard because there's so many distractions. So the things we would like kids to be curious about, they often aren't. And it just doesn't work to kind of smack them over the head with a hammer. So I think TED Ed is really an experiment in trying to nurture curiosity. It's trying to, we do several things, but they're all aimed at that one goal. Can you ignite the spark?
And it's true that the most popular TED Talk ever is actually about this sort of lack of creativity and curiosity in education, right? Or is that, what is it about that that made people say, I gotta click on this and watch it?
So yes, the number one TED Talk ever is Sir Ken Robinson talking about creativity in schools, and it's a heartfelt plea that creativity should be nurtured and supported. Why is it the most popular in TED's history? Partly because it's incredibly funny. I mean, he is just a brilliant speaker. It's full of hilarious anecdotes about kids doing crazy things. But it ends with just a beautiful parable. I mean, it ends with the story of Andrew Lloyd Webber's choreographer, who discovered that far from being educationally subnormal, she was a dancer and she just needed to celebrate her creativity. And when she moved to a dance school and had those skills taken seriously, she found who she was and that person thrived. And I guess there are a lot of people out there who feel that their school let them down and that they weren't given a chance to really be who they wanted to be.
Why are you here other than the kind of TED Ed project? I mean, is there something about the school reform movement such as it is that fits in with what you see your mission at TED, or is it more of a personal interest? How do you fit in with this crowd, which is, you know, largely it's sort of a wonky policy, state legislator-oriented group?
TED's mission is ideas worth spreading, and the most important part of that mission, logically, has to be kids. I mean, their minds aren't fully wired yet. They have their whole lives ahead of them. Ideas matter more for them than for anyone. So in recent years, education's become a bigger and bigger part of our focus, our passion. And so that's why I'm here. And I think, you know, we are nonpartisan. We're not really involved in the detailed policy debates and so forth. But we do think that education needs radical reform and that learning needs to be joyful, you know, like the whole experience of learning from a great teacher can be the most thrilling thing on earth. It's heartbreaking that in so many classrooms that isn't happening, and so we think that where TED Ed has been most thrilling is when you find a teacher who is really good at what they do, and you give them this platform, and then suddenly in a week, they have reached tens of thousands of kids. When in their whole life up to that point, they'd reached 1,000 or fewer. That's special.
Do you buy, I mean, obviously you can't be a full skeptic of this sort of concern about screen time for kids or video replacing actual instruction. I think you've just made a very good case for why that's true in part. Do you buy any of that critique though? Do you think there is something lost or dangerous or sinister about not just the video form, but also perhaps the sort of abbreviated, sexy, glossy, 15-minute TED form?
What can't be lost is the human contact. I mean, in the talk I just gave, I said that what technology might do is empower two different kinds of teaching. You know, subject-based teaching, where a subject is explained brilliantly and passionately, and people kind of are inspired at that level of, boy, now I get this has come alive in my mind. I now know I want to be a historian or an economist, or I never knew that before. I was so bored by this before, but now I get it. So there's that. But it can't be just that. The human teacher who sits down with the kid and looks at them and sees that they're upset or stressed or worried and has some issue, puts their arm around them maybe and listens to them and tries to encourage them and take them forward. I mean, that has to be part of teaching as well, I believe. And the argument is that the technology can allow more of that, not less. Mm-hmm. That by outsourcing some of the subject instructional part to the world's greatest teachers, that you, the person with this kid right here, can spend more time on one-to-one.
Is there any specific single or maybe cluster of policy proposals that would make your mission easier? So, I mean, I think everyone has ideas about how to improve education, but like, is there a law that's in your way? Is there a regulation that's bothering you? Are you worried about internet regulation? I mean, what is there anything on the policy side that you're like, ah, just this one thing?
We're not, you know, we're nonpartisan. We stay out of the policy debates as much as we can. Our currency is ideas, passion, curiosity, excitement. So we basically want to put a bunch of tools out there and let people do with them what they will. We're a nonprofit. We've got no, money-making motive or any other motive. It's just look, in the connected age that we're in, these tools, dear teacher, may help you in your mission to teach better. Would you like to use them? And so I think they're compatible with many different policies, and I think they are, in many ways, they operate at a more granular level. If you believe that schools should spend more time, you know, in the flipped classroom or in some other way, you should be able to use these tools in some way. But it's not. We don't really know yet what it take yet. No, it has to be this way. We don't know how to organize a school. We just think that the way in which schools organize probably needs to change quite dramatically.
What is your best case scenario for TED-Ed? Like, what, when you sort of look to, let's say, 5 years in the future, is it kind of a sea of classrooms with kids watching TED videos? Is there something more that your sort of your next phase might be? What's your long-term vision?
I think one of the most beautiful things that could come out of it is the co-creation by thousands of teachers around the world of an archive of lessons that are freely shareable, where the best work of a teacher has been combined with video resources that are available. So the way some of our tools work is that any teacher can assemble their own lesson out of, for example, a YouTube video, and then add questions to it and so forth. Those best lessons can be used by the teacher, but they can also be shared. So I think. The whole reason that TED itself has worked in the last few years has been because the crowd has got involved. You know, that's why talks have been shared across the world. That's why our TEDx thing has spread. So I just really believe in this power of open. And so to provide tools that allow teachers to help each other, that I think would be the best outcome. And we're excited at progress so far.